Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Several years ago, New Yorker magazine writer Susan Orlean left Manhattan for upstate New York and bought a sleek chicken coop complete with four hens. Now she's clucking about her new feathered companions and their fresh eggs, while cities across America are holding forums on whether chickens should be allowed in backyards. This hour On Point, it's all the rage, backyard chickens. Joining me now from Pine Plains, New York, is Susan Orlean. She's an author and staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, where her essay titled "The It Bird: The Return of the Backyard of the Backyard Chicken" appeared in the September 28th issue. She owns seven chickens. Susan, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
I'm happy to be with you, Jane.
So tell us, when did you first consider owning a chicken?
I don't think I had ever really thought about it, having chickens. Before a few years ago, when I happened to watch a documentary called The Natural History of the Chicken, which I have to recommend, it's extremely funny. And also, for the first time, I think I saw chickens up close and thought, wow, they're so pretty and they're so interesting, and you could get eggs just like that, just walking into your backyard and getting eggs. It stuck in my mind for a while, and then when I moved to a place where I had enough room for chickens and started seeing them in other people's yards, I thought, as far as undertaking a little bit of livestock, maybe this is where I should start, with something small and manageable, which is, of course, one of the big reasons that they're so popular.
So did you want to raise chicks? Was that initially?
No, I didn't want to raise chicks, and in fact, in the beginning, part of my problem was I didn't want chicks. I didn't want tiny little babies because they're pretty vulnerable, and if you get if you buy them at, say, a feed store, you generally have to get at least six, and at the time, I didn't want six. They have to stay under a heat lamp. They need to be taken care of in a way that I didn't think I knew how to do yet. I wanted chickens that were already, you know, adolescent, that they could be living outside, and they didn't have to already be laying eggs, but I wanted them to be past that stage where they really just look like cotton balls.
You can buy chickens that are ready to lay, right? I mean, chickens come in the mail today, don't they?
Mine came in the mail, and I have to say it was one of the strangest things I have ever received in the mail. As I mentioned in my story, I got a call. They're delivered to the post office, not to your house. And I got a call from the postal clerk in my town who said, "You have a package here." And then she paused and she said, "And it's clucking." In fact, the post office will ship a lot of different kinds of animals, which is sort of funny to even think of. But they came in a cardboard box that had air holes. And they were already almost as big as they are now. Just they weren't quite as filled out. But they look like chickens. They didn't look like little chicks. And it was a huge surprise to come home and open the box and think, I have chickens. I mean, I'm a product of the suburbs. I've been living in Manhattan for many years. So this was my first foray into livestock.
And so here's a city girl with these chickens. What'd you do first? I mean, how did you go about taking care of them?
Luckily, thanks to the existence of the internet and the quick start guide that came with my chicken coop, the famous Egloo, you know, it provided some basics. And one of the great appeals of keeping chickens is they're very easy. They need water. They need food. They'll eat a lot of different things. So, you know, while certainly they are better off being fed chicken feed, they'll also eat a lot of other things that you might feed them that are leftovers from your own meal. And they need some kind of shelter. They need to be safe from predators, and they need to be able to stay warm at night. It's not, they're very easy compared to some of the other animals that I've toyed with getting, you know, compared to, say, a horse or, you know, 100 head of cattle.
Okay, but what about the noise and the smell and all the things that, you know, they don't necessarily have the greatest rap as far as, you know, being a household pet, do they?
Well, I want to make a distinction here. My plan was never to have them sitting in the living room watching television with me. They are livestock, but they're really entertaining and they're very social and they're fun to watch. But my plan was always to have them live outside. If you keep their coop clean and they have enough space, they're not any smellier than, I guess, than having dogs might be, or a litter box. The noise is, if you don't have roosters, it's very pleasant. They kind of chuckle and chat, and it's a really nice sound.
You use the word purr in your piece.
Well, it almost does sound like purring. They have a way, and actually, each chicken has a very different voice. I can tell the difference between my chickens.
Oh, no, you can't.
I can. I really can. I mean, they sound different. One of mine, who just talks constantly, and she has a very purry sort of voice, and she's always just chuckling and purring. And another one is incredibly quiet. I've never heard it make a noise. And then one of them that was my quietest little hen and very shy and very demure and just beautiful. And one day I was noticing how big and gorgeous she'd gotten. And then she opened her mouth and started to crow, and it turned out that she's a rooster. And roosters are noisy. They definitely are noisy. I don't find it an unpleasant noise at all, but I can see in the city, a lot of cities will permit you to have hens, but they won't allow roosters, because roosters can be very loud.
Especially at 6 in the morning, right?
Yeah, and actually they don't really just crow at 6 in the morning. They crow whenever they're in the mood. So it can be at 4 in the morning or it can be all afternoon. So they don't just let out one big crow in the morning and wake you up.
So when did you realize, Susan, that there was a chicken movement, as you call it in your piece, underway in this country?
When I first started researching how to get chickens, because that was the first question I had, is where do I find chickens and chickens of this age, and where can I find a nice-looking chicken coop? I started noodling around online, and lo and behold, I began finding more and more internet groups, I mean, dozens and dozens that had thousands of members, and dozens of internet sites, including ones that were very specific to urban chickens. And I don't live in the city anymore, but there are many, many people keeping chickens now in cities. And there are at least a dozen websites that are specifically for people who are interested in keeping chickens in city limits.
So what's the draw? I'm reading from your piece, chickens seem to be a perfect convergence of the economic, environmental, gastronomic, and emotional matters of the moment. Does that pretty well sum it up?
I think so. And we can parse the sentence and I'll explain what I meant. In terms of economic, while if you price out the price per egg when you start keeping chickens as your companions and pets, you're not necessarily saving loads of money.
Right, because buying eggs is not that expensive these
days. Exactly, but it is a feeling of self-sufficiency that I think appeals to people in economic hard times. While it may not make absolute sense in terms of the dollars, the feeling that you're able to take care of yourself is extremely potent when people feel that times are tough. And that's been true throughout the history of economic depressions in this country, that there's a real rise in things like keeping gardens and keeping chickens. Mm-hmm. Environmental, there is nothing as green as keeping chickens. You have a perfect recycling system, that they will eat a lot of your scraps and table food that you might otherwise throw out. you can get fertilizer from the chicken manure.
Which is particularly powerful, I understand.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you can't use all of it. They will eat bugs and scratch through your garden. They're a good system. They're sort of a perpetual motion machine in terms of environmental concerns. And they really are, they lay eggs. You use the eggs, they'll eat the shells. Mm. They're kind of incredible.
You know, we'll get into the debate of backyard chickens throughout the country in this hour, but I'm just curious, the reaction to your piece in The New Yorker, which I particularly enjoyed. I hear it was overwhelming.
Amazing. This really was fascinating to me. I think, first of all, there's no question that there's a huge rise in this as a hobby. McMurray Hatchery and the two other big hatcheries that sell directly to consumers like me are totally sold out of their chickens, and this has been true for the last 2 or 3 years. They have no extra stock. They're sold out before the chickens are even being sold. But I think there's also some emotional connection that made the story particularly interesting for me to write, and I can tell you a little bit about that after a break.
We will. Susan Orlean is our guest. She's the author and staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. Her essay was titled The It Bird, The Return of the Backyard Chicken, a huge success in that magazine. We're talking about the surge in interest in raising backyard chickens across the country. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour, as you can guess, about the backyard chicken movement in America. Joining me now from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, is Elaine Bellinger, editor of the three-year-old bi-monthly magazine Backyard Poultry, which has 50,000 subscribers. She owns 23 chickens. Nice to have you with us, Elaine. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for inviting me.
So are you surprised by the number of subscribers, 50,000, a total circulation of 95,000 3 years into this venture, your magazine?
Well, not really. Like Susan said, we've been seeing the growing trend in poultry. And the magazine just keeps getting more and more interested people.
So who are your readers? Are your subscribers young hipsters? Are they parents hoping to teach their kids about where food comes from? Are these people who moved to the city, used to live on farms? I mean, who are these people?
Well, most of them are people who already live on a farm or a small community. But more and more we are seeing people in the urban areas also subscribing to the magazine.
So in which urban areas have chickens really caught on?
Everywhere.
Yeah. Are there places where we would be surprised to learn that backyard chickens are actually allowed?
Well, I'm not sure if people are surprised at this point anymore. Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Seattle, Washington, and lots of areas in between.
What are the restrictions as related to backyard chickens in different cities and towns across the country? I know there's a huge debate about this going on in many places.
Most of the time, well, they'll have an ordinance that either permits or prohibits livestock, and in general, the chickens are considered livestock. If the ordinance is passed, they usually have some parameters. An example is the city of Madison, Wisconsin. They allow 4 or less hens, no roosters. They set guidelines that there's no processing or slaughtering of poultry. They do have to be housed in a secure enclosure, and have to be no closer to the neighbor than 25 feet on either side of another neighbor's property. They are also required to have a permit, just like people are supposed to have their dogs licensed each year.
And so what are the arguments then against backyard chickens?
Well, I guess the main arguments that people have are concerns about odor, concerns about getting on their property, just like somebody's dog will roam over onto other people's property. There's some concern, I guess, about noise and concern about disease, probably are the four main worries that people have.
Let me bring in a voice now who shares some of those concerns that are out there from Iowa City, Iowa, Mayor Regina Bailey. This is her second year as mayor of Iowa City. Before becoming mayor, she served for 6 years on Iowa's city council. She is opposed to efforts to allow backyard chickens in Iowa City. Mayor Bailey, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about what's going on in Iowa City. The backyard chicken debate is raging. How much of this of your time is this taking up?
Well, it's been very interesting. We have a lot of other issues going on. We're still recovering from devastating floods from 2008, and chickens seem to be the issue that most people want to talk about. So that's a little surprising to me. How the whole thing came up is we had a group of people circulated a petition and presented it to council. The council then asked our staff to look into this, investigate the other communities that have ordinances allowing for chickens in cities, and they brought a memo to us a couple of weeks ago requesting fundamentally saying that we could do it if council wanted to move forward. We could absolutely move forward with this, but our animal control officer requested that we take about a year. They're still displaced with the animal shelter from flooding, and she said that their capacity would not really provide the opportunity to address this issue for about a year.
So you've come out against backyard chickens, Mayor. Why?
Well, for a lot of the reasons that Elaine outlined, but even more, when one considers making policies in a community, I really think that that's a balancing act. And so there's an expectation of what it means to live in a city. And I'm not sure that this meets the general expectations. Having livestock next door to you when you move into a city doesn't really meet the general expectations of what you think of when you move to a city. I think our policies and our ordinances need to, mitigate conflict between people who live close together. And quite frankly, I'm not sure we've had enough discussion. We're a big discussion community, and I'm not sure that we fully understand what the implications would be.
So you think that clucking and the purring, as Susan Arlene refers to, that's disruptive to many people. Is that what you're finding?
Well, people are concerned about odor, as Elaine mentioned. People are concerned about noise, and people are concerned about chickens getting loose. I add another concern. We're a college community. Our shelter sees a lot of influx of animals abandoned at the end of the semester. My concern would be this would be an additional strain on the shelter capacity at a time when, you know, our economic resources are increasingly limited. So I think we have to think through this very carefully about what the impact is to having livestock in the city.
And so with that said, what would it take for your city to monitor backyard chicken coops beyond the shelter?
The animal control officers would have to monitor these as well as our housing inspection services. Mm-hmm. And so it would be across department monitoring, some permitting. I would like to see, a greater dialogue and some better understanding of what this would entail. I certainly don't want people to get into this, if we move forward on this, don't want people to get into this with minimal understanding of what it means to raise these animals, because that puts animals at risk. It puts the whole concept at risk.
So are there cities that have education requirements?
Susan
Arlene, I can hear you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because one of the things that I found very interesting is the different feeling we have about a utilitarian animal, like a chicken, versus purely an ornamental animal, like a dog or a cat. And I have a dog and two cats, so I'm not saying this in any way, except I think what I found fascinating was our growing discomfort with the idea of working animals. Mm-hmm. And none of the issues, for instance, the noise issue, dogs are so much noisier and frankly more dangerous than a chicken.
So, Mayor, what about it?
Chicken conflict really exacerbates conflicts between neighbors, and that's, I think, one of the things we have to think of from a policy perspective, is how do we approach that? Yes, absolutely, there are ways. What my concerns were simply, what is the capacity to address this at this time? And you're right, we have a different approach between livestock and pets, and Iowa is an agricultural state fundamentally, and I think that understanding is pretty it's pretty deep in our culture here, and so we would have to begin to have that discussion about the distinctions and how we manage that in community.
So how would you say, Mayor, that Iowa City's population is divided on this issue? Is it 50-50, for and against, backyard chickens?
No, there's a very, I would say that there's probably a 25% very vocal group, pro-chickens. I mean, we are a community that's very supportive of local foods. I would say that that's a very popular idea. I would say it's a 25-75 split. It's a very vocal group. I think that one of the things we need to do in this intervening year is have a lot of discussions about what this could mean, how we manage it, how we approach it, how we build capacity to do it. It's not, I mean, other cities have done it. I've gotten calls from people expressing concerns about some of the challenges other cities are facing. We need to learn from that if we move ahead on that.
Mayor Regina Bailey from Iowa City, Iowa. Good luck to you, Mayor. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. Let's go to the phones, hear from our listeners. Belmont, Massachusetts is where Gail is calling from. Gail, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
We had chickens in Belmont, which is a dense suburb, upscale suburb 8 miles from downtown Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Now for 4 years. I have eight. I was one of the first to request a permit from the town who immediately assumed that we would not be allowed to have chickens because we are a suburb.
Mm-hmm.
They went back and they looked in their files and saw that I could have 12 chickens according to a bylaw written in 1940.
Ah.
And their response was, well, we're going to update that bylaw. So I worked with them to update that bylaw and to overcome some of the concerns, which were all the ones you've listed. And said, let's take it as a pilot program, and let me have my flock. If it's a problem, if the neighbors get upset, well, I'll donate the chickens to a farm, and that'll be that. So we went about it very carefully, and what the result was that we were able to overcome all those concerns. I keep the coop clean. There is no smell. We don't have any roosters.
Any concerns from the neighbors? Any complaints at all?
The neighbors definitely raised their eyebrows when I went around and I said I'd like to try to have a flock of hens. And it was very important that I use the word hens instead of chickens. It was much less threatening. And I opened the neighbors up into the process. And I said, I made sure they knew that if this became an issue, there would be no chickens in my backyard.
So I'm curious, Gail, initially, why chickens? Why do you like chickens?
Because I really wanted to move out to the country and have a barn, and I have a border collie, and I wanted to have a flock of sheep. And my family was dead set against that. They wanted to actually move into the city. So the compromise was a suburban house with a flock with a coop in the backyard.
Right, but is it the eggs? Is it the clucking that you like? What is it?
It is all of it. I bake and I garden, and so I tell people that the third leg on that stool is chickens because I need the fertilizer and I need the eggs, and I can't get them any better than if I get them myself.
Mm.
It's the clucking. A friend of mine says that listening to my chickens, it sounds to him as if they're saying, everything's going to be fine, 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 fine.
Yeah, it's one of the most soothing sounds you'll ever hear. So when people talk about the noise, if you spent time around a small, well-cared-for flock and you just hear this sort of burbling sound, it's like having a water feature in your yard. It's a very, very soothing kind of sound. Now, I'm curious how many of your neighbors now have decided they want chickens, because
oh my goodness.
I think it's contagious.
I think our town's health department said, okay, let's just let this crazy lady have her chickens, and we'll be done with this issue. And now there's like 15 flocks in town.
Yep. I mean, it's funny. I've gotten so many. I've had many, many friends who've been here, particularly people with kids or people who like cooking, and they're here and they see how really easy it is and how pleasant it is to be around the chickens, and the next thing they call me and say, so tell me again where you got that coop. Where did you get your chickens?
Yep.
Well, Gail,
last winter I ordered chicks for the first time, and there's a minimum of 25 chicks. Well, I certainly wasn't going to have 25 chickens, but I raised them in the back room, and I found I had no trouble giving away my spares.
Gail, I really appreciate your call. Everything's going to be fine, 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 fine. I'm going to tell that to my kids from now on. Thanks so much for the call. Good luck.
You're welcome.
Will is on the line now from Boston. Will, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Go ahead.
I just have to say this piece is amazing. These hens, my mother, who lives in Maine, had a little plot of land with her husband. They garden, she cooks, and she works at home. And these chickens have their own identities. They've named them from people they went to high school with or people they went to concerts with. They're great socially, psychologically. They're utilitarian. As a result, I mean, they lay 2 eggs a day, 42 eggs a week. Mm. My mother is making all of these friends in the neighborhood. They're like, oh, here's some eggs. You know, she'll put them out on a table in the front, and people will buy the eggs, and they're better than a dog. They're better than a cat. I mean, this has been so great, and especially my sister and I, who are now left the house, and I finished university and live in Boston, this has now fulfilled her empty coop syndrome because now she's got chickens. So I'm really just so happy because she's like every day, and I'm telling her to blog about it too. I get a picture of these girls doing all sorts of crazy things, and sometimes she'll dress them up in a costume, and I'm like, Mom, you're getting a little bit obsessive. So.
But, you know, you make an interesting point, which is that it's I love animals, and I love my dog, and I love my cats. It is a very different experience to have an animal that's useful, to have a relationship with an animal that is giving you something back. And this was the experience that Americans typically had up until the 1950s when we all fled to the cities and the suburbs and cut off our relationship with working animals.
Well, that leads me to another point, Susan, because you pointed out in your article, and we hear about, you know, Will talking about his mom and Gail, of course, that chickens have traditionally been cared for by women. Do you find that it's still women who are drawn to chickens?
I think it's a real range, but it certainly was traditional that they were part, almost just an extension of the kitchen garden, the small garden that the housewife, the farm wife, would maintain to cook out of, not to sell from, but to use for her own purposes. And she'd keep a couple of hens, and when she had excess eggs, she'd sell those, and that would be her pocket money, her mad money. Mm. And there is some, I think that the people interested in chickens now, it's a huge range, and particularly as men have been brought more actively into the world of cooking, as opposed to, you know, if you watch Mad Men, just for a glimpse at 1960s thinking and try to picture Don Draper cooking a meal. You know, it reminds you that for many decades, men had nothing to do traditionally with anything having to do with the food in a family.
Yep.
So I think that's changed it somewhat. You know, more men being involved in the issues of food and so forth. But there is a certain harmony that women and chickens seem to have. I mean, and it's not just that all the laying chickens are female, because all milk cows are female too, because that was my first thought. Oh, they're all girls. And then I thought, well, so are all the other animals that provide milk and so forth. But the fact that they're small, they're easy to manage, they were a form of livestock that women always were comfortable with. I cite a book that was written in, I can't remember the exact year, if you forgive me, sometime in the 1800s, called What Can a Woman Do?, which was suggesting professions for women, and they included such high-income professions as poetry.
Some audio at the top of this segment here from a YouTube video. It shows an urban chicken rancher paying a morning visit to his chickens.
It's early in the morning, and we're going to let out the chickens. Here, chickies! Come on out! How is everyone? We're going to check to see if there are any eggs. Oh, and you've left us 2 eggs, you nice girls. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That leads us nicely into our first call from Columbia, South Carolina. Karen is on the line. Karen, thanks for holding. Welcome to On Point. Hello.
Thank you. How you doing?
Well, thank you.
I'm sitting here with my chicken coop plans in front of me.
Okay. What do they look like?
Well, you can. There's enormous resources out there. My library was full of resources. It's interesting that some of them were already checked out, so clearly there's a chicken movement going on. I live in an area that has big backyards, and I certainly have room for them. And I discovered when I did some research that my house is actually zoned in the county, and the county will let you keep anything. I think you could keep a crocodile if you wanted to. There are no restrictions other than health and safety, sanitary restrictions.
And so how many are you thinking of getting?
Oh, four. Nothing big.
Okay.
But what I discovered was that the city restricts, but the county doesn't. However, on the same street, some of the houses are zoned in the city and some of them are zoned in the county, which is a whole other political issue.
Mm.
But there are lots of resources, and I think maybe differently than the Northeast or the Midwest, there's poultry and livestock all over the place in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. People are accustomed to keeping chickens, and when I was a child, all my aunts and uncles had a few chickens, and feeding them was part of my job. So when my New Yorker arrived and I saw Susan's article, I laughed and said, okay, big trend moving.
Right.
You
make a good point, which was that it was very, very common for people on any small piece of land to keep a couple of chickens. People didn't buy eggs in supermarkets until really the 50s. It was something that you either raised your own or you'd buy some from a neighbor. And in many cases, you know, when your chicken wasn't laying anymore, you'd cook her and you'd get a meal out of it. And it was very typical. And when people began migrating towards cities, many people did bring their chickens.
Mm.
They kept one or two more because it was like growing a tomato plant. You know, you felt like you needed to have that as a resource.
Mm. Karen, thanks so much for the call. Elaine Bellinger, jump back in here. You're the editor of this very popular backyard poultry magazine. You have 23 chickens of your own. Help us understand what breeds of chickens are especially good to raise in backyards. Are there some chickens that are better in those environments that are maybe friendlier, for example, than others?
There are certain breeds that are more gentle than others. Another popular type of bird is the bantams, which are a smaller breed of chicken. People who live in an area that don't have much room, bantams are about between a quarter and a fifth the size of a standard chicken.
Mm.
Some of the more gentle breeds of chickens include Brahmas, Cochins, Dominiques are a gentle breed. Most chickens, if you handle them, are going to be gentle and become very friendly with you. So, but it does help to pay attention to words like flighty, some terms that imply to you that they're not going to be as gentle as other ones.
And
there
here
are some
I
nice see. Websites that
okay.
explain those things too.
Okay, good. Would you give one?
One is called Henderson's Chicken Chart. He gives a great explanation, and to find that, you simply Google Henderson's Chicken Chart. He explains the different type of breeds, what color eggs they lay, whether they're good layers or not, what kind of personalities they have, talks about the comb on the bird, which can be important in winter weather. Having a tighter comb on a bird is a good idea.
We'll talk about that in wintry land, because here I sit in Boston, and I'm wondering how might a chicken do in Boston in the winter? Do you have to heat your coop?
Most people do heat their coops, but you don't have to. Birds are actually quite adaptable to cold weather. A lot of people still do heat their coops. And one of the easiest ways I know of to heat the coop is to have your waterer have a heated waterer base that allows the heat to keep the water from freezing so your birds constantly have water, and also emanates some heat out so that you don't have to actually put a heater in the coop.
Hmm. Apparently chickens also, Elaine, are not only valuable for their eggs, but also for their droppings, as one of our callers referred to earlier, which can be used as fertilizer, no?
Yes. The fertilizer is high in nitrogen. I shouldn't say the fertilizer, the poops, as we call them.
And that's a technical term, right?
It's the most technical one we use, I guess. Droppings is certainly another. They are high in nitrogen and mixed with other composting materials work very well in enhancing the garden.
Here's another call from Groton, Connecticut. Jupiter is on the line. Jupiter, hello. Welcome to On Point.
And it'll pick up hair and stuff.
Hi, Jupiter. Are you there? Jupiter, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. You're on the air. How are you? How old are you?
I'm 8.
You're 8. Do you have chickens, Jupiter?
Yes.
Yes? And what makes chickens so enjoyable for you? Why do you like chickens?
Hi.
I think Jupiter has the delay on. She has a radio on.
Jupiter is thinking that and coming up with her answer, I wanted to mention that I had spoken to Martha Stewart in the course of working on the story, and I think she certainly deserves credit for having brought the idea of chicken keeping to a whole lot of people who might never have considered it.
Well, she loved her chickens. She named her chickens. She talked about them in her book, right?
One of
her
first books. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think she brought them out of what I called a sort of netherworld where keeping chickens was thought to be sort of dirty and low class, and it wasn't. It had lost a great deal of appeal. One thing she mentioned is how much kids love them.
Mm.
And she said she gets fan letters constantly from young boys who just love the chickens, want to know more about the chickens. And that is one of the nicest things about keeping them. I have a 4-year-old, and I love the idea that he sees animals who are not just our pets, our house pets, but also that they're contributing something and that we take care of them in a certain way. Mm. And then also he sees that we're eating the eggs. And it's a wonderful thing with kids. And I think as we grow further and further removed from the world of natural things, it's especially nice to have a kid experience a cycle like that and seeing this is food, this is how you make food, and this is how you treat the animals that are providing food for
Jupiter,
us.
Jupiter, good luck with those chickens, and thanks for calling, my friend. Let's go to Andy in Atlanta, Georgia. Andy, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. Hello, Susan and Elaine. This is Andy the Chicken Whisperer.
Hi,
Andy.
This is wonderful. Andy is well-known in the chicken world.
Andy, you have a radio program.
That is correct. Every day, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday, we talk about keeping backyard poultry. And it's interesting to me that, you know, anytime you mention chickens, all of a sudden in people's brain, they have this stereotype of the commercial chicken farms with 100,000 chickens and a 500-foot chicken coop, and they can't quite grasp the idea of a beautiful chicken coop in the backyard with, you know, a half a dozen chickens, and so they automatically start getting defensive, you know, but just because they're not really sure what you're talking about when you say, I'm putting some chickens in the backyard, and so we have to quickly address that and explain to them exactly what we're talking about, you know, and it can be done very inexpensively for maybe $125, and then you will get your benefit from eggs. And you know, people who are already buying free-range eggs or organic eggs at $3.50 or $5 a dozen can go about it and save a little bit of money. But, yeah, if you're buying the $1.29 eggs, then you might break even. But as you've been talking about, all the great benefits other than just eggs, the insect control, the composting, the pet aspect, it all adds up. Mm.
I really appreciate your calling, Andy. Thanks so much. Good luck with that program. Steve is on the line now from West Haven, Connecticut. Steve, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Yes, good day to all. I think this is a wonderful show. I just dropped in on it maybe 15 minutes ago, and I'm wondering if this has been raised or not. I'll get off the air and get out of the way. I think it's a great idea that people are doing this, but my cautionary one concern of mine is what about the viruses when you get high concentrations of people around high concentrations of birds like that, and the viruses, as we've seen in Asia with the avian flu things,
mm-hmm.
Passing back and forth between humans and birds. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think it's great. Go for it. And I'll get off the air now.
Steve, thank you very much for calling. Elaine Bellinger, what is it? What's the answer? Bird flu, avian flu, is there a concern?
I don't anticipate that people having a few birds in their backyard would cause the same kind of problems that we're seeing in the countries where they actually keep those birds in their homes and process the birds in the home. It's really a sanitary issue, and we have not seen that backyard flocks in America have any evidence of the AI that he's talking about.
All right.
With any animal, you need to clean your hands after you work with them. And
I also think, and I'm perhaps wrong on this, but the real worry with avian viruses is with birds that travel and migrate.
Mm.
Your flock can get an illness and it can wipe out your flock, but since they're staying on your property, I don't think that there are so many issues about things spreading. And I don't know how many diseases really jump from poultry to humans. I think those are the exception rather than rule.
Very, very few.
Good question. Thanks for the call. Joe is on the line now from Barrie, Vermont. Joe, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Well, what a great show. Fantastic. We're having a little problem up here in Barrie, Vermont, where a lady has some chickens. And they're giving her a hard time. But what a good idea, you know, get back to nature. I mean, back to farming and do these wonderful things. What people think that I'm an over-the-road truck driver. I've hauled many, many chickens in my life. People think that the food comes from out back of the supermarket, but it comes from the farm. And this is just wonderful, I think. And I think people should be encouraged to do this. And that's all I want to say.
Very good, Joe. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Brian is now calling from Lincolnton, North Carolina. Brian, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, I'm glad people are raising chickens also and getting backyard eggs. But what does the average housewife do with the non-productive chicken? Does she keep feeding it, or does she wring its neck and boil it and pull the feathers off of it and degut it and cook it, fry it for Sunday lunch, or what?
You know, that's a good question. I've got to tell you, many, many, many people have asked me that. None of my chickens have yet reached the age of being no longer egg-laying. And, you know, I asked Martha Stewart what she did, because she has a large flock, and she's had them for years, and she said, well, I slaughter them, you know, and I feel fine about it. I'm raising them and giving them a good life, and then when they're done with that part of their life, then I'm cooking them. I don't anticipate doing that, but I, as I said, I haven't gotten to that point yet, because my oldest chicken is only 2.5 and she's still laying eggs.
And life expectancy is, Susan?
I think it's between 5 and 7 years. Elaine probably knows better than I do. You know, I've lost more to predators than to old age.
Ah,
so,
which is generally how it happens.
And predators are what? Predators are skunks, coyotes.
Everything under the sun. Hawks, I think.
Usually
hawks
your neighbor's
are,
dog.
Hawks. I've two. My neighbor's dogs killed two. I think foxes, but definitely hawks are one of the biggest problems that we have. But coyotes, everything. Everybody likes chicken.
So leave us with a thought for this program, overreaching, far-reaching here, Susan, Elaine. What is it about chickens that you'd like everybody to know, especially those chickens that you own and care for on your own property? Elaine Bellinger, you first.
Well, I think that people would realize that having chickens are a lot more fun than they expect. Most of us have either memories of Grandma's farm, which was wonderful, or the commercial industry, which is not. And in fact, chickens are really very fun to have around. They're entertaining, better than any TV show, and very easy to keep.
Susan Orlean, you get the last word.
I have gotten so much pleasure from undertaking this little hobby, and in many more ways than I imagined. It is an incredibly satisfying,
fun, funny, interesting, and, you know, gratifying undertaking. And if you're a person who likes animals or who likes cooking or likes gardening, you're going to probably really enjoy it. Chickens are an incredibly surprising creature, and it's really fun to live near some.
Well, you two have convinced me. I'm a believer. Susan Orlean, author and staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, her essay titled The It Bird, The Return of the Backyard Chicken, appeared in the September 28th issue. Thank you so much for your time, Susan, and great piece. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Elaine Bellinger is editor of Backyard Poultry, a three-year-old bi-monthly magazine. She's got a 50,000 subscriber base. She's got 23 chickens and had great insight this hour. Elaine, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.